Hey, everybody, this is John Suntress, and this is a Word Balloon Aw Yeah Comics special. Art Balthazar Franco and Mark Hammond of Aw Yeah Comic Stores in Harrison, New York, and Skokie, Illinois, have been having conversations with our favorite creators to support their Patreon page, patreon.com/awyeah. And they've been talking to some of our favorite creators and just hanging out and having great nerd fan conversations. Among them have been Dan DiDio and Walt Louise Simonson and Jeremy Hahn and Philip Sablik. Well, I hope you're going to enjoy this conversation today with Mark Wade, of course, the wonderful writer for DC Comics, Marvel, and currently the editor-in-chief of Humanoids. Again, consider going to their Patreon page, patreon.com/awyeahcomics, and help support the stores and their cause in making great comics and making great comic shop experiences. I hope you enjoy these conversations, and thanks, as always, for listening.
We are live with Mr. Mark Wade. Yay!
Hey.
That's my best Kermit impersonation that I do.
Yay. You're not waving your arms enough. It's
crazy. Welcome to Armageddon.
Welcome.
I said this on Facebook, but it bears repeating. We've spent, you know, all us geeks, all us nerds, we've spent probably 15 years debating about what life would be like in a zombie apocalypse, or what it would, you know, what the afterlife, what it would be like in this situation, how the world would be like. What none of us ever took into account is the fact that there'd be such a big swath of people who would refuse to accept that zombies even exist, even as they were getting their arms gnawed off.
Yeah. I always laugh. I point out anytime I'm selling a zombie book, it's the zombie fiction always exists in a world that has no zombie fiction.
Yeah. Yes.
with Shaun of the Dead being the exception to that. But like Walking Dead takes place in a world where no one's ever heard of zombies before.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, well, how's the store holding up? What are you doing to keep the lights on?
You know what? So it has been a team effort. We added the Patreon, which everyone's watching right now. Thank you. We started up a Threadless store, so we're selling t-shirts, mugs, hoodies with apparel. We're doing more eBay. We relaunched awyeahcomics.com, and now it has. We had a store in it before, but there wasn't much in it. Now we're slowly but surely adding all of our graphic novels, and eventually we'll add a lot more than that.
And I just watch as Mark does everything.
Yeah,
I do a daily live sale at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and now you know, Skokie and Muncie do them as well. Muncie actually started first, but nobody wants to see us close. it's actually been really humbling. Our customers and friends and family from other states, and you know, fans of Art and Franco's from other state, they buy stuff they know they don't need. But if it sounds like it's going to be a great story, and luckily people trust me to steer them in the right direction. But the response so far has actually been overwhelming.
And this was this particular thing with the video and you coming on and doing this is taking place of our live signings, as it were, in the meantime. So we figured we would bring creators to the people of Aw Yeah Comics. So here you are.
Great idea. What else you got lined up?
We're going to be talking to Drew Zucker from Canto. It's a new I don't know if you know who Drew is. It's a series from IDW that came out last year and was really burning up the charts. But the cool thing about Drew is he's an EMT in New York City. Life is hardcore right now. He's
on the back end of that. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No,
I was going to say on the back end of that, we're in the process of blackmailing Gail Simone, Jason Latour, and Scotty Young as well. So
during one of our live sales,
you intel on all of those guys.
Yes. Gail actually popped up in the comments thread of one of the live sales, and it was 20 minutes worth of she and Franco bantering back and forth. And then people were messaging us like, "You guys know Gail Simone?" And I'm like, "No, we don't know her. She just stalks us for some reason."
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Mr. Mark Wade.
That's me.
Tell me if you would. So you've done a ton of conventions over the years. You've done a ton of signings. You've met thousands and thousands of fans around the world. Can you pick not necessarily your favorite, but one amazing interaction with a fan?
I can give you a good, and I can give you a weird.
I will take both.
So the good is I was just yesterday going through a bunch of old files because I when I moved back out to California from Indiana, I boxed up a ton of stuff that I hadn't looked at for years anyway. And I pulled out a letter from a 12-year-old fan. And it must be 15 years old, but he was talking about Flash, and he was talking about what he loves and that he really felt like I was helping make a difference in his life. And I don't know whether or not that's really it ended up being that case, but that's the kind of thing that really makes you feel good. It's one thing to address a room full of people and a room full of fans, and that's awesome. But that sort of one-on-one where people act as if you've actually done something to help them by your stories, by reaching out to them, that's the best. The weirdest. All right, so
excuse me.
So the year was 1992. A young Joe Piscopo was on Saturday Night Live, and we at the Charlotte Heroes Convention, we had a special reunion of Legion of Superheroes fans, just specifically like a sub convention just for us. We had a big dinner, speaking afterwards, and a couple of panels. And the Legion fan base, by now, the median age now is dead, by the way. But I'm still a proud card carrying member. And we were mostly guys and ladies in our 30s and 40s. And we had a little, like I said, we had a dinner. And then afterwards, we had people get up and speak about what the Legion meant to them or what fandom meant to them or that kind of thing. And I'll never forget, there was this one guy who got up. He was maybe 19, 20 years old. Very nervous, very jittery. Got up to the microphone, just sweating bullets. And he just wanted to say how much the Legion had meant to him over the years and how it touched him, and there are these characters that were, included in the sense of inclusion, the sense of family that the Legion promised that he didn't really experience in his life. And he made connections with certain Legionnaires, like the White Witch. The White Witch was his favorite. And, but he grew up in high school, and he was kind of bullied, and, he didn't know if anybody else felt that way. And we're all like, dude, we all felt that way. You're one of us. And it was a really nice, nice interaction. We really felt like we buoyed that kid up and really made him understand that, he was part of our tribe. Next day, he's walking around the convention floor, and he's got a briefcase with him. I said, really, what's, hey, I've almost used his name. Hey, sir, what you got in the briefcase? Oh, well, I like the White Witch, and I've done a lot of drawings of her over the years. And would you like to see? Well, sure. I'm really buoyed by your enthusiasm. Open it. Let's take a look. And he opened them up, and they were the raunchiest, pornographic drawings of the White Witch you could possibly imagine. He's swiping and tracing from Penthouse and from Wii and all these other magazines that nobody even knows about anymore. It was just chilling to the bone. And we just, I just kind of backed away slowly. Good seeing you, Kevin. Walked away. Can you edit that out? Can we do that? Too late.
No.
Okay, it's there.
Oh, and you slipping the name ruined my joke. I was going to say, and that was the first time Mark met Art Baltazar.
I know.
It was Art, actually.
He was, let's pray he's not watching this right now, 20
he's
years.
Not.
20, he's 30 years, 30 years ago. Yeah. So
there's lots of Art Baltazars out there.
For a few years later, for the few years onwards, I would, every once in a while, I'd see him, walking past the convention. I didn't feel a need to cozy up to him. So again, very sweet, well-meaning fan, but oh my God, his collection of porn.
I have a weird story involving me and you.
Yeah.
I have a few Mark Waid stories.
We went out to dinner, and I can't remember, I think it was in Chicago. And we went out to dinner, and we were talking, and the conversation just turned, into as it always does with us, like we're fans of comics, and we were going around talking about which was our favorite comic, and it got to me, and somebody asked me, and I'm like, oh, and I went into detail about, you know, this Justice League story that's my favorite Justice League story, and Batman, you know, has like the secret file where he's kept on how to take down the rest of the Justice League, and I'm telling this story to everybody, and I turn, and you have this big smile on your face, and I look, and I'm like, oh crap, you wrote that story. I'm like sitting next to the guy that wrote the story and I'm telling him his story to him. So I was kind of mortified.
That's I'll give you another fan story. Not from me. It's the best, but it's the best fan interaction story I've ever heard. So years ago, Erin Gray, as you know, played on Buck Rogers and was a
sweetheart. She's a sweetheart.
Enormous part of my growing up, just exactly the right age for Wilma Deering to be Heartthrob. And it's one of those lucky things where, you know, in the conventions, they'll throw a bunch of you in a van because you're all leaving about the same time. And so that's kind of when you get a chance to meet the media guest and the other guests you haven't had a chance to talk to yet. So Erin Gray's back there and we're swapping fan stories. And she says, well, I had a stalker once. Said, do tell. She said, well, I was back in the Buck Rogers days. And she said she was getting fan mail from one specific guy who was very happy to see, you know, very, very, very big, much a fan, very, very complimentary. But unlike the other letters that she got about the show that came to Universal, these were coming to her house.
Oh, boy.
And this alarmed her. It alarmed security on the show. They started escorting her to and from her car after shooting. Just not sure what to do. And the letters kept coming. And again, they transformed slowly from, I really like your work, I'm a big fan, to don't tell your husband about us. Big imagined relationship. And all this goes on. It goes on for weeks. She can't figure out where these are coming from. One day, the penny drops. She opens up the most recent one, and it's this, and it's this, and it compliments her on that green dress she wore a couple of days ago. Blah, blah, blah. And she said, wait a minute. I didn't leave my house when I was wearing that dress. The only person who saw me was my mailman. It was the mailman.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Worry. The feds swooped in on him like black on a bowling ball. Yeah.
Wow.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the first time Erin Gray met Art Baltazar.
you beat me to it. I was gonna ask if you were a mailman ever.
Too many jokes today.
I have held many jobs. What are the weirdest jobs you guys have held over the years? Franco, give me some past jobs.
I only had a few. I worked in my parents' restaurants, so I did everything from wait staff to clean staff to cooking to everything. I worked as a production assistant. Here's the weirdest one.
Yeah.
You remember those 900 commercials from years ago where they would sell phone time and you could talk to these different people, celebrities, I guess.
Yeah.
I did a commercial starring Jessica Hahn, and if you don't know who she is, look her up. I worked on the 1-900 commercial for Jessica Hahn's Love Line, or I think that's what it was called. It was like the weirdest, most surreal thing ever. But when I was working for that company, I did commercials with Tony Randall, Grandpa Al Lewis, Jim Brown, the football player. Yeah. And then one day I walked into work and Jessica Hahn is sitting there. I'm like, this has got to be the weirdest thing ever. Fun times.
And that's the first time that Mark Hammond called Jessica Alba. Jessica Hahn. I stepped on my own joke.
That's okay. It's still funny.
Did you meet Tony Randall?
Yeah.
I think he was the greatest guy.
He was so really focused. He was doing a tax prep commercial, and he was like super serious, and everybody was really nervous around him. And I'm going to swear, so just to brace everybody. So if you have to earmuff the kids, earmuff them. But he had to deliver his lines, and everybody was just so very serious and just, you know, kind of edgy around him. And he goes, and you should pay your taxes. You know why? Because the government fucks you. And he went into this long tirade, and everybody was like, we couldn't imagine Tony Randall doing that. And after he was done, he goes, okay, is everybody relaxed now? Good. All right, let's do the commercial. So he was super sweet. Yeah.
Hammond, you must have had some weird jobs in the past.
You know, not really. I if it wasn't working in a comic shop, it was working in a restaurant. I think the weirdest job I ever had when I was 16, I worked at a horse stable for the summer. One of my high school classmates, they had horses and they were shorthanded. So, and I got my my left foot stomped on by a massive horse, and I still have two broken bones. But I can tell you a funny comic shop story that was a little odd.
I will remind our viewers that the reason that you don't have many unusual job stories in the past is, as most people know, we found you living in a cardboard box underneath freeway overpass when we hired you. So,
well, yeah, but I don't like to talk about that.
Too late.
It was with the horse that stomped on his foot. So
they made a lovely. They kept each other warm at night.
So I was living
totally on your story. Go ahead.
I was actually living in the horse, like Tauntaun style. So, for you Star Trek fans out there, and forgive me because I'm going to forget the actor's name. It was a Monday afternoon at the shop, and we had the shop I was working for in Florida, and we had a TV, and we were playing Star Trek Generations. And one of our customers started going off on the captain of the Enterprise B. And it's the actor who played Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. Alan Ruck.
Alan Ruck, right? And so after this tirade that the customer went on about this guy, I defended the captain. I was like, listen, he may be a little nervous because Jim Kirk is standing there, but they don't give you the Enterprise unless you've got something, right? Like, so maybe give the guy a break. And I all of a sudden I hear from behind me, he goes, thanks, man. And I turn around and Alan Ruck is standing in our store. He was doing the touring production of The Producers, oddly enough, playing the Matthew Broderick role, and had stopped in to get some comics for like one of his castmates' kids that were going to be with them that weekend. I had no clue he was in the store. He walked in during the guy's tirade, and I was getting something out of a showcase, and then he heard me defend him. And then he sat and just chatted with us for 20 minutes. It was one of the most thrilling days I've ever had.
That's the universe right there. That's fate, right? Yeah. I mean, what are the odds?
So, Mark, have you ever – we meet a lot of people, right? We meet a lot of creators. We meet a lot of actors. We meet a lot of, you know, celebrities. Have you ever, like, fanboyed out in front of somebody, like you couldn't keep your cool?
There must have been – Adam West is one. Adam West was so awesome, and I just couldn't help myself but just geek out in front of him. And he was so great. I even stood in line for the photo. It was a small convention in Ohio. I could have just walked behind the table because we're all peers at that level at that point. But no, I wanted to play by the rules. So I stood in line and got up to the front of the line and kind of stammered out who I was and what he meant to me and what Batman meant to me. And we chatted for a second. In the meantime, his handler was looking over to the other side doing some business with somebody else. So we finished talking, and Adam West just peels a photo off the pile and just starts to sign it up. And his handler said, now his handler's paying attention and goes, oh, that'll be $20. And Adam West said, no, this one's for my friend Mark. Now, he used my name in a sentence. That was the best part of the story. So, yeah. I nearly geeked out about 2 months ago. I had breakfast with George R. R. Martin, and that's not the best part of the story.
I have a George R. R. Martin story that I'll hit you with in a second.
I met him a few times. I mean, he's really good guy, really sweet. And once we started to bond on – it was Humanoids business. But once we started to bond on just – Marvel Comics, the 60s or whatever, it was just, you know, it was clear that we were very much from the same tribe. As we're talking, Patrick Stewart comes up to fanboy over George R.R. Martin. That was the coolest thing that ever that happened to me that month by far.
That's awesome.
I wonder if my wife and I could have a picture with you. If it's not, he was so adorable. It was great. And I just sat there. I didn't know what to say to him. Nobody wants to go, I loved you as Picard, because everybody says that, you know. Mm-hmm. You want to say, like, you know, I loved you in that one show on Stars that I can't remember the name of, but I saw every episode of. So
when I met him in the 90s, I told him that I loved him in Excalibur. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, thank you. That's awesome. George R. R. Martin. I met him once, really, really briefly, at C2E2 in Chicago. You know how the Hyatt lobby, long walk, Avatar Press, William Christensen Company. This is before they rearranged everything and expanded the bars and stuff. So he sent one of his guys to the liquor store and one of the Chinese food restaurant, and they took over one corner of the lobby. And I'm walking, and he had known me from a convention I worked for in Florida. And he's like, Mark, come on over. And he goes, you read those Fire and Ice books, right? And I said, yeah, absolutely. He goes, ever met Martin? And I said, no. And he goes, hey, George. And George stands up from amongst their throng in his little cabbie hat and his suspenders. And he comes over and he goes, George, this is my friend, Mark. He's a big fan of yours, but he's too chicken shit to introduce himself. So George goes, that's great. Come have a beer with me. Now, Mark, you know me. I don't drink beer. But when George R. R. Martin says, sit down and have a beer with me, you sit down and have a beer with the guy.
Yep.
Yes. So that was my George R. R. Martin. We, for about an hour, I sat there with George R. R. Martin just talking about comics. Ridiculous.
Because he's a hardcore fan about that stuff. He's also very old school. I had to listen to him bitch about how they ruined Flash and Green Arrow for TV because it wasn't like the comics. And I tried to point out to him, we get to see the Elongated Man on television. We never thought this would happen in our lifetimes. You know, roll with it. So
I remember watching the episode of Flash with you where they mentioned the Speed Force for the first time.
Oh my God.
And I looked over to my left, ladies and gentlemen, and Mark just had this look of childlike glee and wonder. And seriously, still one of my favorite moments. That was pretty cool.
It is probably one of the half dozen times in the last 10 years that I can remember where I just felt nothing but absolute glee in every cell of my body. It was just the best.
How do you, being one of the preeminent Flash writers, how do you feel about the show overall?
I like the show overall. I mean, it gets slow sometimes. There's rough patches in it where I'm not maybe paying attention to every frame, but again, I try to take the good with the bad. You're getting Jay Garrick on television. You never thought that would happen as long as you live. So I'm not too critical of it. I just kind of lay back and let it wash over me. I don't watch all of the CW superhero shows. I wish I could, but if you told me when I was growing up that there would be a show with Rip Hunter and on it, and I would not watch it. I would have thought you were crazy, but
or just in general, a TV show about superheroes every single night of the week, basically.
Exactly. And again, it's not that I don't enjoy them; it's just that there's so many of them, it becomes homework.
Right.
You know, anything once it stacks three or four up on your DVR, right? It just becomes daunting. So, yeah. What about you guys?
I enjoy their
CW shows.
CW, you know what? I'm like two seasons behind on everything. I managed to watch the crossovers, and I like that they do a pretty good job of making it where you don't have to be caught up to watch the crossovers.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing. There's a lot of them, and just I couldn't possibly watch all of them.
Yeah.
Did you see the Superman tribute yesterday on Twitter with the Lex Luthor?
No. So, with Lex.
Frank, I don't know if you saw this, but yesterday was the anniversary of Action One coming out, 82 years, right? And somebody tweeted out, like, you know, happy birthday to Superman. And John Cryer, who plays Lex Luthor in Supergirl, that guy's on Twitter, like, he's overrated. And then Clancy Brown, who voiced him in Justice League and Superman, he goes, you know, agreed. And then Michael Rosenbaum gets on. He goes, thirded, actually, he's quite a dick.
Yeah. That's funny.
And then I guess the there another Lex Luthor chimed in, or another Luthor character from one of the other shows chimed in, like, last, but it kept going. It was just
That's great. Well, Speaking of Superman, then. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. John Cryer, best live action Lex Luthor ever.
Yeah.
He's uncanny. He is exactly my Lex.
When they announced him for the show, I was like, ew, really? But then I happened to catch that crossover, and I'm like, he's really good.
He's great.
Yeah, we all thought, ooh, Lenny Luthor. It's going to be awful. But no, Ducky is Lex Luthor, but he's so chilling, and he's so evil, and so who knew he had that in him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was going to ask. Speaking of Superman, you are like a huge Superman fan. What is the most bizarre fact about Superman that you know?
Good question. There's so many rattling around in my head.
I know there's a few out there, but what do you find, or what would come to you as the most bizarre Superman
fact? Bizarre.
Yeah. Or weirdest or whatever, you know.
I know. It's like asking a musician to name a musical note. There's 88 of them. I can't, you know, and complicated by the fact that right now in quarantine, I've started doing a complete read through chronologically of his life. So
wow.
I'm started with the earliest Superboy stories. And I'm up to about 1959 and taking copious notes as I go. Here's one I know. In one of the Superman stories, there's a story called The Super Ape from Krypton. I want to say it's Action 218, somewhere in that ballpark. And a superpowered ape, superpowered gorilla, actually giant, you know, King Kong-sized ape, is roaming around Africa. Superman has to combat it. Turns out, as the ape is exposed to kryptonite, he turns back into human form. For a brief period, and is able to explain, oh, I was actually a Kryptonian survivor. I was put in a rocket ship too, and I was sent to Earth, but I was victim of some genetic experiment, and a bunch of us were. He's dozens and dozens of us were subjected to these experiments and then sent off into space, and then Krypton exploded, and we're all turned into apes. So Superman not only helps the guy escape kryptonite, and he turns back into an ape, a talking ape. But then Superman finds all the other apes from Krypton and puts them all together on one planet and leaves the other ape there and waves goodbye, and that's it. And so we've all forgotten that somewhere out there, there's an entire planet full of giant apes with Superman superpowers. I had totally forgotten that.
I want to read the follow-up to that story.
Me too. I want to kick myself that I never wrote a follow up to that story.
I was going to say, when are you going to write it?
Well, the doors are open now, so it's I got to say, after 12 years, it's kind of nice getting calls from DC editors. It's just saying.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Well, I'll quiz you on Superman trivia. Can you tell me who invented periwinkle kryptonite?
Yes, I know. It's the boys. It's the boy. The Sweeney, yes.
Do you remember what it does?
I do not remember. I'm shamefaced. I do not remember. Remind me.
It makes him fabulous.
It makes him fabulous. And Lois uses it because it makes him dance with her.
That's right. Yes. Coming back to them.
I remember getting a call from Franco saying, somebody updated the Superman Kryptonite Wikipedia. And then you're like, yeah, I did.
That was me.
All right, let's go Marvel and DC, because you've written for both. You've written a lot of different characters. Yep. Who is one of each from each company that you want to get your hands on, or at some point in the future want to tell a story of?
Every time I hear somebody ask Mark this question, I always answer the Marvel one for him. Clearly, it's Wood God. He wants to write Wood God.
Clearly, it's Wood God. No, it's Captain Ultra. Clearly, it is Captain Ultra.
Aquarian.
The God's honest truth is Tom Brevoort and I at Marvel have this conversation every couple of years, because we're like, okay, you're sliding off this one book. You want something else to replace it. Who have you not done yet? Which is how we got to Doctor Strange, which I never would have thought of, but it worked out well.
I love the new series, by the way. That's so good.
Kev Walker, such a good artist, man. Yeah. I'm really – but anyway, so so we talk about it, and I think Iron Man. The only two of the big characters I never touched are Iron Man and Thor, except in, you know, Avenger stories. Yeah. And Thor, I think he's a great character, but I don't have anything to say about Thor. But Iron Man, I'm such a science boy and such a tech boy. I'm sure I've got some Iron Man ideas to me somewhere. And at DC, surprisingly enough, the one character I've never written more than like one story starring is Batman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wrote him in lots of Justice League. I've written him around in different stories. Yeah. I did a one shot with him years ago that was Batman in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. That was a special event that tying into something that Barcelona wanted. But I've never written Batman on any kind of regular series.
Well, circling back to that whole Tower of Babel thing, reading that, yeah. I'm going to gush again. Reading that, I'm like, how has no one ever thought of this before? Like, this is what Batman would do.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was just, I so lucky that once you have one of those ideas in that time between you have it and the time you can put it on paper, you live in panic that somebody else is going to get to it first. And that's how it was.
Wow.
So of the various ways that Batman takes down that version of the Justice League, did you have a favorite?
Yeah, the Red Kryptonite, because I got a chance to reintroduce Red Kryptonite. Okay. But to do something with it that would be creepy and macabre. I mean, Red Kryptonite, for those who are just joining us, affects Kryptonians in different, wild, extraordinary ways each time they're exposed to it. Never the same way, never the same effect twice. And sometimes it makes them invisible, and sometimes it gives them a giant ant head, and sometimes it makes them half invisible. And those kind of things, which got pretty silly pretty early on in the Superman mythos, but I really wanted to do Red Kryptonite as no. This is John Carpenter stuff. Like, this is when it affects him, it does really macabre and bizarre and cruel, awful things. Like in that case, turning his skin transparent so that the solar rays that energize him beef him up even further. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I think how you took down Kyle. The post-hypnotic suggestion that he was blind, so his will makes the ring make him blind. I thought that was great.
Thank you.
That's how I'm going to take it on Franco. It's going to be good.
As a writer, people ask me, like, you know, your process and everything, and I always tell them my biggest fear is me passing away or something happening to me, and then people getting to look at my browser history in my computer because of the research of all the ways, you know, you want to kill people or the you know, yours must be like ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Exactly. I wonder what kind of government watch lists I'm on just by my Google searches. Yeah.
So can you tell us, so we're at the 32-minute mark, and I know you didn't have a lot of time. Before we go,
we can go another 10 minutes or so. It's fine.
Okay, yeah, and then I'm gonna go because I'm gonna catch a train home. It's gonna be good. But can you tell us? So you're Humanoids. Tell us about what you're doing with Humanoids Publishing.
Sure. I mean, I consulted with Humanoids, a European publisher who has been doing stuff in the U.S. for a while, and branching out over here. I consulted with them for over a year, just kind of giving them the benefit of my experience over the years. That, you know, I've been doing this forever, and I've done everything in comics. And it was a good experience. And about the end of last year or so, we started talking, well, maybe you should take on some more responsibilities here. Maybe you should do this and this like a publisher would, or maybe you should do this and this like a publisher would. And I said, well, basically, so you want me to be the publisher? Well, yes. And that was exciting, because it's a whole different world for me. It's not periodical based. It is, we do some periodicals, but our main stock of trade is original graphic novels. And that's a new field for me, and it's fun, and it's not as many moving pieces. The office is small, but they work well. There's like 9 of us in the office. So the first day, I sat down and I said, with all of the hubris imaginable, the most amount of hubris since Icarus, I said to the staff, you know what? I have seen every problem there is in comics. I've seen everything that could possibly happen. I've seen it all. So don't worry about it. We can fix anything. In fact, I look forward to you bringing me a problem I've never seen before.
Better be careful what you ask for.
Yeah. And God saw it as a challenge, and suddenly we have a week later we have a pandemic, and now we don't know what to do. So navigating those waters.
This is all your fault.
Yeah, this is all your fault.
Yeah. Navigating these waters has been tricky, but the good news is we're one of the publishers who's got enough cash flow to survive it as long as we need to survive it, and spend that time sort of figuring out, okay, what do we want this company to look like on the other side? Yeah. And that's a great advantage. We don't have to furlough anybody. We don't have to, you know, tell artists and writers to put their pencils down, which I get. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I know that Marvel gets a lot of criticism from fans about how they're stopping production on some of their books, whereas DC doesn't seem to be. But you got to remember, AT&T, who owns DC, they're doing pretty well in this pandemic. In fact, this is to their advantage, because now we're using telecommunications more than ever. Conversely, Disney loses $30 million a day just on the theme park closings. So I get that there may be a little more money to, and you know, a little more rainy day fund for DC than there would be for Marvel. So, but I do think both companies will come out of it okay. I just don't know what the landscape looks like after that.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how it all pans out.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, cool. Well, we don't want to take up any more of your time. We want to appreciate we appreciate you taking the time you did for us and putting this up on the Patreon. But anything else you wanna throw out there? Books you're working on currently, going to be working on, or anything like that?
Humanoid stuff. Doctor Strange. There's nothing we've announced, but there's a couple of big things that are coming in the new year, including a book. So, including not a comic book, but a book.
Interesting.
So we'll talk about that in the months to come.
Cool.
And then, so for all of you watching out there, this week we're going to be adding a new tier to the Patreon. It'll be a monthly tier. It will only be available for 4 people. We haven't decided on the price yet, but basically you will get an email from us containing a PDF script by Mark Wade. He's going to go back through his archives once a month and send me some scripts so that you can take a look at what his writing process is. So this is really geared more towards the creative people out there. You know, Mark, we really appreciate you doing that. And for those of you who don't know, like, Mark is one of our partners in All Yeah Comics. And we're super proud to have you on board always. Thank you so much for the time and for your candor and for your beard and for being our favorite Flash artist
of all time.
All time. That story's for another day, folks. We'll tell you about
how. Now go wash your hands and we'll be out. Okay.
Yeah. It's awesome. True. Thanks, Mark. Have a good night.
All right. Take care.